The next speaker is very dear to my heart, and I think dear to most of your hearts, too. He's a gentleman that has taught me so much. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. He is fun. He's joyous. We were dancing backstage. And he is, first and foremost, a wonderful leader. You all know him, and I think almost to a one, we all love him. He's very special. So it is with great joy that I introduce the founding pastor of the Los Angeles Church of Religious Science and president of the Religious Science International, speaking on the heart and soul of science and mind. Let's welcome Dr. David Walker.
Thank you. Thank you, buddy. Thank you. Thank you very much. I've been teaching the science of mind for a little over 25 years, and I've come to a conclusion. Before I tell you what the conclusion is, I'd just like to ask a general question, and that question is, what do you think most people want out of a religion? Well, answers to life, probably. A hope for a brighter future, that makes sense. Salvation, certainly. To be absolved from their sins or of their sins, yes. A place in heaven for a lot of people. People want many things from religion, don't they? And they'll be attracted to the religion that offers it to them and the minister that offers it to them in the best way. Common sense. What does religious science offer the world? A teaching called the science of mind. We don't offer absolution because we don't believe in sin. And because we don't believe in sin, we don't believe in the need for salvation. And we don't offer heaven because we believe that heaven is a state of mind that no one has the power, no religion has the power to bestow on someone else. We say that heaven is a state of mind that's self-generated. And my favorite phrase has always been, to get into heaven, you have to take it with you. I once heard someone say that what we offer the world was ancient wisdom that can be used to meet the needs of modern-day men and women. Sounds good, doesn't it? Is this what people are clamoring for? Well, it could be. I once heard a woman say, the New Thought religions, all of them, offer an alternative to traditional religion. I guess that's true as far as it goes. I don't think it goes very far. I believe that what people are clamoring for, and by the way, I believe what people need, and I mean all people on this planet, is something very simple, and that's a sense of self-worth. This is the conclusion I've reached after 25 years of teaching this. Why? Because not everyone is prone to be attracted to a religion of any kind, and yet everyone wants to feel good about themselves. And I came to this conclusion by one day just sort of thinking, why am I doing this? Did you ever ask yourself that? Why am I doing this? And I asked myself, seriously, why are you teaching week after week, year after year? Why do you spend so much time? What are you after, Walker? What do you want to accomplish? Teaching the science of mind? Yeah. Why? Why do you want to teach this? And I guess it's because in my own personal life, there were many years I spent on this planet not thinking I amounted to much. And when I was being honest with myself, I said, you know what? That's why I'm in this business. To reveal in people's minds that there were something. And I realized that that's not only true of religious scientists. It's not only true of the students who come to my church and yours looking for an understanding of the science of mind. What does that understanding of the science of mind give them? A sense of self-worth. That's the heart and soul of Science of Mind, and that's what we have to offer the world. A realization that this very moment, with everything just as it is, nothing added and nothing subtracted, each of us is perfect, whole, and complete. How many times have you heard those three words? Perfect, whole, and it has become a rosary bead in our church. I'm imagining the perfect, whole, and complete. I'm blessing up a perfect, whole, and complete. When that happens, it becomes meaningless. I know, because at one time I had a string of pearls that were meaningless. And you know the string of pearls I mean. Well, it's true. We are perfect, whole, and complete. We're more than an alternative approach to life. We are life in its most exquisite expression. Now, why is that? Because we offer a teaching that reveals the structure of the visible and invisible universe and the part we play in that structure. And that part reveals dignity for all people. And this dignity, within it, is the kernel of self-worth. Yes, we're all seeking self-value in one form or another. Now, I'm not talking about liking ourselves, because we can like ourselves and still not think we're worth much. And that was the case for me. I liked myself. I didn't have a problem with me. It's just that when you add it all up, I didn't amount to much. Why? Because I looked at my education, not great. I looked at what I thought my intelligence was, not too great. In fact, I can remember when I first picked out of a used bookstore a book, a metaphysical book, and I saw writing in the margins of a woman who not only understood this man named Thomas Troward, but made comment on what he was writing. And I read the book and I thought, holy catrits. Whoever owned this book must have been really smart, because they not only understand it, but they're commenting on the things he said in the thing. And I said to myself, one day I want to be able to do that. Write comments in the margin. Who knew that one day I'd be standing up here as president of an organization filled with people who write comments in margins? Yeah. Self-worth is what it's all about. That's why I'm in this business. And I would like you to entertain the idea that maybe that's why you're here too. Because when you know you're worth something, you automatically give yourself permission to be healthy. You automatically give yourself permission to be happy and prosperous and to express yourself in a satisfying way. In fact, when you know you're worth something, you give yourself permission to love and be loved. And I think that's one of the stumbling blocks of love. You see, it's easy to believe that the only issue is, am I worthy of being loved? But the other side of that is, does my love amount to much? And the reason some people don't love, I believe, is for a very simple fact that when they add themselves all up, it doesn't come to much that loving means very much. And if it doesn't, then you will never find someone really to love or to love you. Why? Because the starting point isn't worth the trouble. When you know you're worth something, you require good in your life, because it reflects what you know yourself to be. I'll repeat that. When you know you're worth something, you require good in your life because it reflects what you know yourself to be. Now, the word require is an interesting word. And I came about it when I was a singer in Hot Springs, Arkansas, singing at the Vapors Club. Get that. And I was being reviewed. I was opening for Phyllis Diller at the time. Remember Phyllis Diller? And I did the singing and the then sing before she came out and killed the audience. In any case, the person doing the review invited me over to his house to have dinner with him and his mother. When we got there, it was a gorgeous house, lots of antiques. And the bottom line was, when we sat down at the table, there were 22 knives, 74 forks, and the plate had underneath it had a lot of fancy, I don't even know what it's called, but it's fancy stuff. And at the end of the meal, I said I was spiritual, not sophisticated. Well, there I was at the end of this meal, and the lady came up to me and she says, David,
yes,
do you require cream with your coffee? And I thought, do I require cream? And I started thinking about it, and I thought, do I require cream? I like cream. Cream is good. And then I thought, well, if I were honest with myself, if there's no cream, I don't drink coffee. It's the truth. So I said, yes, I require cream. And years later, I became a metaphysician, and I found a word to replace I want money. I require money. I found a way to replace I need something. I require something. When you know you're worth something, you require the good that is available on this plane of action. You require it. And you require it because you know who you are. You know what you're worth. All of the science of mind, and I venerate the science of mind, this principle, conscious mind, moving ideas, thoughts, feelings, impressions into a subjective medium that knows how to take that mentation and move it into our experience. That's what we learn. What does that give us? An understanding of a natural principle? Yeah. Is that all? No, it's not all. When you really internalize what the message, the heart and soul of science of mind is to reveal, that the universe is saying to you, accept yourself right now, right as things are, right as you are. And that's the heart and soul of science of mind. You see, when you know what you're worth, you require all that life has to offer. Health is then a requirement, and so is prosperity, love, and perfect, satisfying work. If you don't think you're worth something, see, these are real simple terms. I'm worth something. If you don't think you're worth something, you may just withhold all these things from yourself because in your mind, you don't amount to much. So few people do this deliberately, but it can become a lifestyle, this lack of self-worth, and it'll find its way into most everything in your life. It affects everything you do, from ordering food in a restaurant. What does that self-worth have to do with ordering food in a restaurant? Well, you know, in the Chinese way, you read from right to left, right? That's the way the Chinese read. It's the way they write, from right to left. And I found that at a certain point in my life, because of my lack of self-worth, I was going into a restaurant, and I didn't look at the food. I looked at the prices, from right to left. I was moving into every restaurant as a Chinaman. When I got the science of mind, when I got the heart and soul of science of mind, I stopped reading from right to left. I didn't look at the price. I asked myself the disarming question, what do you want to eat? Oh, well, that changes everything. And I'm not lying. That was a real thing. The price came first. Well, when you have a sense of a lack of self-worth, it affects the clothes you buy. You know what I'm talking about. Don't you buy better clothes, better quality clothes, nicer things now than you did a year, 10 years ago? It also affects the person you choose as a life partner, a wife, a husband, or a lover. You see, your partner represents what you think of yourself. It represents your self-worth. So what are we saying? Got to get rid of my partner quick. You think that'll cure anything? Oh, no. Because your partner is nothing more than a reflection of what you think you're worth. I have a woman in my congregation. Thank God she's not here today. And I swear to God, every time I see her, she's dating another man. And you know how she describes that man? Well, I'm into rescue again. This guy's really a bum, but I seem to be attracted to men like that. the bad boy. I simply like the bad boy. And I said, that's all right. You know it. You're doing it. There must be some payoff in it for you. But she does that because she doesn't have a sense of herself. I said, keep taking classes. Keep coming on Sunday. You'll get it. What is there to get? The heart and soul of science and mind. The fact that she's worth something beyond the way she relates to people or the way people relate to her. What specifically does religious science offer the world that can lead to self-worth? Well, I talked about it. A teaching that reveals God within. And a teaching that reveals a creative principle within. Is this what people are clamoring for? Well, I don't know. I don't know if it is. Are they clamoring for an identity that's negotiable or an identity that's not negotiable? Are they clamoring for an identity that can't be won and can never be lost, but is simply the sum and substance of every human being, regardless of what they think, they say, and they do? An identity that transcends all religions, all religious practices, and all accomplishments. An identity that defines every single human being on this plane of action as the very presence of God. Is that what people are clamoring for? Well, maybe not exactly in these terms. People just want to make them feel good about themselves. They want something that makes them feel good about themselves. And I'm addressing it from this universal sense so we get an objective or another look at why we do what we do. Actually, it's not so much that people want something, but it is as they want something back. Bring back to my remembrance the glory I had with thee before the world began is one of my favorite statements. Because it's saying, I know intuitively what my identity is. Let me remember it. People want to experience something they know already exists, God within. But you know, I found out something teaching this stuff for 25 years, that the within can be so far within that it might as well be without. And so can the principle of mind. It can be so far within that it might as well not be within. So imagine a day when the concept of God within will no longer be used because we realize we are the within. I am that I am. You see, I believe our understanding of the heart and soul of science and mind must lead us to a place where when we say God is within, it's more than just words. It's more than an abstract theological concept. It's more than a vague reference to a power that is personal to you that you can use. It's a realization that we are the power. We are the power. And when we say my thought impresses divine principle, we're saying my thought impresses me. And what I impress myself with, I experience. That's the heart and soul of this science. Dr. Holmes says, God in me, as me, is me. Judge Thomas Troward wrote about it, as I said, in The Creative Process in the Individual. Is that a conceited stand to take? I don't think it is, because conceit is an overestimate of the self. Self-worth is an exact assessment of the real self. An assessment that has to include all people everywhere. And the only sin is when we treat ourselves as if we had no worth. Or treat anyone as if they had no worth. I am so vividly aware of our tendency to dismiss people. And I shouldn't say our, I should say mine. That I've lived a life, even after the science and understanding it, where if I somehow don't think what a person is saying is important, it reflects on my face. And whether it reflects in my body language or not, I'm saying, yes, wonderful, thank you, dear. Now turn somewhere else. Now, that's a little extreme, and I hope I haven't done it exactly that way to you, and I don't... But if I have, I just want you to know I have so much self-worth, I don't care. Now, that's not true. That's not true. And the point of my story is I do care. I do care, and I'm trying to get rid of that thing in me that ever treats anybody as if they're not worth all that God is. Thank you. But you know what? I'm trying to treat myself that way, too. And it's easier sometimes to treat other people better than you treat yourself. And I'm learning how to do that. And it's giving me more confidence in myself than I've ever had. To treat someone else without, thank you, mother.
A young lawyer was talking to his client. And the young lawyer said to his client, "I have succeeded in making a settlement for your husband and you that is fair to both of you." And the woman said, "Fair to both of us? I could have done that myself. What do you think I hired a lawyer for?" Well, see, that's not extending self-worth. Everyone has the right to claim self-worth. I think everyone has the responsibility to claim self-worth. Are people then clamoring for a greater understanding of the creative power, the creative principle that lies within them? Probably they are, but not in these terms, because you see, everyone wants to control their lives. This is true. And that's what the creative process realized allows you to do, control your own life, because you're controlling your thought. But I believe that what people are clamoring for in one way or another is to satisfy the need to amount to something. People in a religion or out of it, in all religions, living on this planet at this time, every person you will ever meet is looking for a sense of self-worth. You can offer it to them in degree by the way you treat them, or you can attempt to rob them from seeing that they have to accept themselves just as they are, adding nothing, subtracting nothing. It's what makes the child standing at the edge of the pool yell, "Mommy, look at me," just before he jumps in the water and creates the biggest splash the world has ever seen. It's what makes children get good grades, self-worth, join junior achievement, or even join a gang. You might be surprised that I link the two together, junior achievement and a gang, but it's because both can represent avenues of self-worth to a child. I met a boy in my, not in my church, but I met this little child, and he was telling me that he was a gang member and that his brother was killed by a gang member in a drive-by. What a sad story. And I said, "Are you out of the gang now?" He says, "No, I'm somebody in the gang." See how important the need to be somebody is? The need to have self-worth, of course. It manifests in many ways. The need to amount to something is also what makes people earn degrees and titles and climb the ladder of success and change their names and drive expensive cars and buy nice clothes and live in beautiful homes and accomplish great deeds. The need for self-worth, all of which are a part of the human experience. But most human beings have it backwards. They accomplish to get a sense of self-worth when we ought to be doing, but when what we ought to be doing is getting a sense of who we are, what we're worth, and then proceeding to accomplish things in our lives. Now, if the only way a person has to gain self-worth is by means of accomplishing something, then so be it. But there is a better way to create a sense of self-worth than using the world of experience to create it. And it's better because it's not subject to the changing tides of experience, and it's not subject to anything. It's a permanent identity that gives us a sense of self-worth throughout eternity. And that is simply by acknowledging something bigger than all the accomplishments put together: our identity in God. The heart and soul of Science of Mind is an invitation from the universe to accept ourselves just as we are, adding nothing, subtracting nothing. God is right where you are this very moment and is that which you are, regardless of what's going on in your life. Well, that's why self-acceptance is so important. If we reject ourselves, we're rejecting God. If we reject ourselves, we're rejecting the power to create something bigger and better for ourselves right now. Now, this doesn't mean that we don't set out to change aspects of our personality and temperament, the ones we believe need changing. But you see, we're not our personality and our temperament. We're mind, pure mind. And when we can get our sense of self-worth from something that's already accomplished, something we are right now, the whole world changes. Our personalities and temperaments are the way we've used our minds, and we negotiate life with our personalities and temperament for the most part. But your identity is not dependent on what you have done, what you plan to do, your name or your title, your personality, your temperament, who you associate with, or your religious affiliation, or even the truths that your religious affiliation teaches. You're not dependent on what Science of Mind teaches. You really aren't. Science of Mind teaches that you're dependent on God. And if we don't get that, then it's not that we put too much trust in the science of mind, it's that we're not getting the heart and soul of science of mind. Because that's what there is to teach. Everybody put their faith in Jesus. When Jesus was here to say, put your faith in yourself. Well, your identity then is not affected by the way you've lived your life or the way you plan to live your life. God doesn't say, oh, good, she finally went to Asilomar. Maybe she'll get spiritualized while she's there. God thinks of you as the spiritual as you will ever become, which means you don't have to make a difference to be worth something. You don't have to make a difference to be worth something. Your worth comes from your identity in God, not from what you've done or want to do with that identity or what you plan to do. No. If you want to make a difference, then make it. But don't believe for a second that God loves you any more because of the difference you've made. Impossible. Or that you're now worth more than you were before because you've made a difference. People may think that, but God loves you because you exist. God approves of you because you exist. And God loves you as much today as God will ever love you. You will never be worth more to the universe than you are right now. Now, that's true. And that's the heart and soul of this science. Well, then why accomplish anything? Is anyone asking that question? I got a great answer for you because it's the truth. The question is, what incentive could we possibly have for creating something, for making life better, if what we're worth is at 100% right now? To satisfy your own soul. That's why you want to accomplish things. Not to get a sense of self-worth. It's because you start out with a self-worth that you are approaching all of life, changing what you want to change. But the radical difference in that approach makes the difference of being happy now or using what you want to accomplish as the promise that you'll be happy someday. And most of us has found out with Peggy Lee, is that all there is? When we demonstrate what we want, thinking that we were going to like ourselves better, that we were going to be worth more, only to find out that we're not. And usually people dash their self-worth right then when instead of realizing they should have started out with it. If God could be more pleased by you because you made a difference in God's wonderful world, what kind of God would we have? A God that could be manipulated. And we left that God a long time ago. So make the differences you want to make in your world, in your life, but make them to please yourself. And if you do, you'll be pleasing God. For though you meet God everywhere and see God in everyone and everything, the only place you will ever actually experience God is within your own mind, your own heart, your own soul. Life is bigger than the philosophy that attempts to explain it, my friends, and you are life. You're bigger than science of mind, and that's what it's trying to tell us. You're bigger than any teaching, than any religious practice, than any religion. And as life, you have the responsibility to think of yourself as worthy of all that life has to offer. Walt Whitman said it. He says, the whole theory of the universe is directed unerringly to one single individual, you. You. Is everything in your life about you? Who else? Who else? And that's what's important about you. The degree to which you value yourself enough to accept yourself right here. Not at lunch, not at the seminar you're going to, but right now and right here. Before you finish that project, before you take that next class, before you earn that degree, before you lose that weight, before you stop smoking, before you've even learned to like yourself. Therein lies dignity. And in this dignity is self-worth. A self-worth that cannot be tampered with. You see, the person who has self-worth is a person who can look to the past and not feel ashamed or guilty, can deal with the present without feeling overwhelmed, and deal with the future without being afraid. Why? Because none of that identifies you. Your identity is in your soul. Can't be bartered for, can't be bought, can't be sold, can't be won, can't be lost. It's what you are forever. And I think that's what we have to remember. John invited his mother over for dinner. During the meal, his mother couldn't help but noticing how beautiful John's roommate was. She had long hair. And the mother became suspicious of the relationship between John and his roommate. And it only made John more curious. He began to realize it. And over the course of the dinner, her mother was watching them two react, and John was watching, and finally, John volunteered to his mother and says, "Mom, look, I know what you're thinking, but let me assure you, Julie and I are just roommates." And about a week later, Julie came, who was the girlfriend, up to John, and she said, "John, ever since your mother came to dinner, I've been unable to find that beautiful silver gravy ladle. You don't suppose your mother lifted it, do you?" John says, "Well, I don't think so, but I'll write her a letter and sort of do it nicely to see if maybe she took it by accident." And so this is what the letter read. "Dear Mother, I'm not saying you did take the gravy ladle from my house, and I'm not saying that you did not take the gravy ladle, but it still remains the fact that one has been missing ever since you came here for dinner. Your love, your son, Bob." John, somebody. I meet so many men. Now, several days later, oh, shut up. Several days later, John Bob gets a letter from his mother, and this is what the letter says. "John Bob, I'm not saying that you do sleep with Julie, and I'm not saying that you don't sleep with Julie, but the fact remains that if she was sleeping in her own bed, you would have found the gravy ladle by now." Well, whose self-worth was on the line there? I want to end this by saying you're worth more than this plane of action has to offer. Remember that. You're worth more than this plane of action has to offer. So walk through the world with your head held up high. And don't be afraid of anyone or anything. This moment, this minute, you are as spiritual as you will ever be. For you are worth what God is worth. And God is all there is. And so the heart and soul of Science of Mind is to accept the invitation from the universe to accept ourselves just the way we are. Repeat after me, "I accept myself just the way I am." A little louder.
"I accept myself just the way I am."
I'll say it with you for the last time. "I accept myself just the way I am." Thank you. God bless. Thanks. Thank you. Hey, Dennis. Hi. Thank you.
Dr. David Walker.